Another time he went into the synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there. Some of them were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, so they watched him closely to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath. Jesus said to the man with the shriveled hand, "Stand up in front of everyone." Then Jesus asked them, "Which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill?" But they remained silent. He looked around at them in anger and deeply distressed at their stubborn hearts, said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and this man was completely restored.
When we're children and teenagers, we live almost entirely by our emotions. When we're children, we tell our parents that they're just completely unfair because they don't want to let us do what we want to do, or they want to take away some of what we think ought to be our privileges or our rights. When we become teenagers, we think that we're 21 when we're 14, and we ought to be treated that way, and everything, it seems, is lived within this emotional environment in which everything is judged by the emotions of the moment, how we feel, and we find ourselves caught up in this emotional swing constantly. And even though we have some ability to be rational about us, that seems to get pressed down because our emotions seem to rule and run everything. It's who likes us when and how much they like us, and when they don't like us, and who we're included with and who we're outed from, and all of this is our life. And we begin looking at people, judging their maturity by the extent to which they are able to get their emotions under control. Not that they deny their emotions or push down their emotions, but simply that they are better able to control their emotions and the appropriateness of them, and that they're able to live not totally by their emotions. And yet, God made us to be emotional beings. He made us to have feelings. He made us to be able to react emotionally to the things that happen around us. And so even as adults, you teenagers need to be aware of this, there are many times when we find ourselves struggling or suffering or emotionally overwhelmed when we will say to people that are trying to help us, "You just don't understand." And they may not, or they may. But one thing is for sure, one thing that we need to come to terms with is that Jesus does understand. The reading that Mike read from Mark chapter 3, verses 1 through 5, shows that Jesus, that man who was God, felt anger and distress. He was angry that men who presented themselves as righteous men of God would be so insensitive to people who were in need. And he was deeply distressed about their stubborn hearts. We find that his righteous indignation or anger was stirred and flared out in Matthew chapter 21 and verses 12 through 13 when he was at the temple in Jerusalem. He walked in during their high holy days and found that there were people buying and selling animals, and it was simply, it seems, an auction gone to seed. And so he drove out buyers and sellers. He overturned the tables of money changers and the benches of people who were selling doves. And he said to them, "It is written, 'My house will be called a house of prayer,' but you are making it a den of robbers." If we were to look on to Matthew chapter 23, we may get the impression at a first reading that Jesus was hypercritical of the Jewish religious leaders. But again, his righteous indignation surfaced. It showed his disgust with how God's people had perverted both God's word and God's will. In Matthew 11, in verses 20 through 24, we find Jesus' sadness revealed as he denounced those cities where he had performed most of his miracles. He was deeply saddened because having seen those miracles, they still had not repented of their sins. It was as if Jesus were saying, what more did they want of him? What more did they want of God in order to believe and to turn away from their sins? No wonder he was deeply saddened. This was a rejection of him. It was a rejection of God the Father. It was a rejection of God's patient and sacrificial love. And then there's that occasion in John chapter 11. You know the story probably about how Jesus got word that a friend of his by the name of Lazarus was seriously ill on the doorstep of death. And Jesus was a distance away, but he didn't leave immediately to go heal his friend, which he had the capability to do. His followers were confused about that. And he didn't exactly tell them why he had not left. And then the word came, his friend Lazarus had died. And it was then that Jesus and his apostles went to see Lazarus' sisters, Mary and Martha. And as they took him to the place where Lazarus was buried, probably every small child can repeat verse 35, that Jesus wept. Just as you and I would over the loss of someone so close to us. In Matthew 15, in verses 1 through 20, Jesus expressed disappointment with Jewish religious leaders who subverted God's commands for the sake of their own traditions. But he was also disappointed with his closest followers in that particular passage because they still did not understand his teachings. They were so fixed in thinking about the way they had always heard it, the way things had always been interpreted, the way they had always understood it, that they simply could not get it. One of his greatest disappointments had to be the account that's found in Matthew chapter 13 and verses 53 through 58. Jesus had come to his hometown, and he had taught in the synagogue, probably the very synagogue that he had been raised in from a small child. But because Jesus was a hometown boy there, someone that everyone knew, someone that everyone had known from the time he was that small child, the fact that he dared to speak with such wisdom and authority offended them. How much it must have hurt to have his friends and his neighbors and perhaps even some of his relatives reject him. Jesus' frustration surfaced in Matthew chapter 17 and verses 14 through 18. Jesus had taken just three of his closest followers up on a mountainside, and we read about this event called the Transfiguration, something that is kind of vaguely explained to us, and yet we really aren't exactly sure what it means. And then they come down the mountainside and rejoin the other apostles. And we find it said that when they came to the crowd, a man approached Jesus and knelt before him. "Lord, have mercy on my son," he said. "He has seizures and is suffering greatly. He often falls into the fire or into the water. I brought him to your disciples, but they could not heal him." "Oh, unbelieving and perverse generation," Jesus replied. "How long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy here to me." Jesus rebuked the demon, and it came out of the boy, and he was healed from that moment. It's hard in a way to understand how Jesus could find himself in this position of being so frustrated. And yet he was. Just like you and I at times find ourselves frustrated, maybe with coworkers, people that we've taught how to do something repeatedly and they still haven't gotten it. Perhaps if you're a teacher and you're teaching kids and you've taught them repeatedly and they still haven't gotten it. and you're frustrated with them. Perhaps as a parent, that you've told your child not to do something repeatedly, and they continue to do it, and you're frustrated with them. And just like Jesus, we're frustrated. All of the anger, all of the distress, all of the disgust, all of the sadness, all of the disappointment, all of the frustration that you and I have felt, all of that has been felt by our emotional God. He knows what it's like to have people let you down, to trust people, and then to be mistreated. He knows it all. God the Father felt all of this. All we have to do is open up literally anywhere in the Old Testament, because it fills the Old Testament, and God's emotions fill that Old Testament as well. God the Father sent His Son Jesus so that you and I could know that He felt all of the hurtful emotions that we experience as human beings. But Jesus also had many positive emotions and positive experiences that went with them, just as you and I do. Matthew chapter 9, verses 18 through 26 records one of many stories that highlight His compassion. It seems that a man came to Jesus because his daughter had died, and this man believed that Jesus had the power to bring his daughter back to life. And without a beat being missed, Jesus immediately left with the man to go bring his daughter back to life. But even as they went along the way with this crowd pressing about him, there was a woman who had suffered some kind of severe bleeding problem for 12 long years, who had tried to go to many doctors and it only made matters worse. And so she had come to her last resort, she thought, Jesus. And she thought, if I can just touch His clothing, I can be healed. And she touched them. And Jesus was aware of that. And He healed her. And then He went on with this man to see his now dead daughter. And everyone thought that it was pointless. In fact, when Jesus told them all to go away, that the girl was not dead but sleeping, they laughed at Him. Imagine how He must have felt because of that. And yet, Jesus went on about bringing this young woman back to life. He understood the parents' emotions. He understood this ill woman's emotions. He didn't feel for her, He felt with her and with them. Jesus saw people's agony. And having God's character, He could only respond compassionately with healing. Jesus still sees people's agony. And He still responds with compassionate actions. But His vision, His compassion, and His power are not limited to healing. In Matthew chapter 15 and verses 29 through 33, it shows there very clearly that Jesus responds to our emotional needs and our needs as a whole, in whatever way we have needs, because He feels with us. In hand with compassion, Matthew chapter 20, verses 29 through 34 show Jesus' mercy as He gave sight to two blind men who were begging for healing. Our emotional God not only feels for us in our agonies, but He also acts to help us in our needs. We often hear the term used, Jesus' passion. It's a term that applies to the time from Jesus' prayers in the Garden of Gethsemane to His death on the cross. But you and I have our passions, don't we? There are things that we are passionate about. We may have hobbies. We may have causes in our lives. There may be things that are particularly near and dear to us that we're passionate about. And so was Jesus. In fact, Jesus was passionate about the value of children, as we read about in Matthew 18 in verses 1 through 6. He valued them highly, and he would not allow them to be pushed away or to be treated as some kind of second-class human beings. All of this may paint Jesus as only this somber, serious character who is unlike us. But the Gospels tell of him being at parties. They tell about him being a person who enjoyed being at a wedding. They tell about him being a person who enjoyed opportunities to be in social gatherings that provided the chance to build relationships. All evidence of our emotional God having emotional needs and connecting with us emotionally as well. Jesus found joy in activities much like what you and I experience, but he found particular joy in spiritual breakthroughs. One such spiritual breakthrough is talked about in Luke chapter 10 and verses 17 through 21. Jesus had sent out 72 of his followers on what we might call a practice mission, a training mission, where they would learn how to go about telling people about God's great love, about God's great desire for them to return to him. And so it is that as we pick up there in verse 17 of Luke chapter 11 or 10, it says, "The 72 returned with joy and said, 'Lord, even the demons submit to us in your name.' Jesus replied, 'I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven. I have given you authority to trample on snakes and scorpions and to overcome all the power of the enemy. Nothing will harm you. However, do not rejoice that the spirits submit to you, but rejoice that your names are written in heaven.' At that time, Jesus, full of joy through the Holy Spirit, said, 'I praise you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because you have hidden these things from the wise and learned and have revealed them to little children. Yes, Father, for this was your good pleasure.'" We need to know, without a doubt, that Jesus experienced the full range of emotions that we do. We need to know that the man who was God fully understands our emotions, our struggles, our sufferings, our sorrows. And we need to know along with that, that he cares and that he will help us. Matthew chapter 26 and verses 36 through 38 remind us very clearly that Jesus knew the greatest of all of this. We read that Jesus went with his disciples to a place called Gethsemane. And he said to them, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." He took Peter and the two sons of Zebedee along with him, and he began to be sorrowful and troubled. And then he said to them, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me." They had no idea about what he was talking about. Oh, he had talked about how at one point in time he would be arrested and how he would be killed, how he'd be raised up, but they didn't really understand what he was talking about. It seemed so strange. It just didn't fit with everything that he was saying and doing to their mind. It didn't fit with the way they had always been taught. And yet here he is, in a time of his greatest sorrow, in a time of his greatest emotional troubling, in a time that he needs them to emotionally connect with him. One scholar wrote this: "Suffering is a part of the physical existence. Since Jesus was a man while on this earth, he also suffered. He suffered being tempted. He suffered rejection in his hometown. He suffered being persecuted and tested by the religious leaders of his day. He suffered agony in the shadow of the cross. He suffered betrayal and denial by his own disciples. He suffered trial before civil magistrates, though he was innocent. He suffered death on a cross. Jesus suffered more than anyone can be called upon to endure, and is the perfect example of enduring patiently all the hardships, all the sorrows, all the disappointments, and all the indignities that can be heaped upon man. The prophecy of Isaiah 53, verses 1 through 6, is of a man of sorrows, the man who is God. In Matthew chapter 11, and in verses 28 through 30, Jesus called to people. He said, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." This is the God who connects with our emotions. This is our emotional God, the one who has empathy and the ability to give us the relief that we need. Won't you entrust your life to Him in the faith that He will give you rest? If we can help you come to Him this morning, we urge you to do so by coming forward right now as we stand and sing.